Next up, we have Nancy J, and she's going to be speaking on step 11. Nancy lives in Chicago. Nancy is a gentle spirit and helps others with compassion, tolerance, and love. We are so happy to have her share with us. Where are you, Nancy? I don't see
I'm
you.
right here. I'm
Oh,
right
there
here.
you are.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I'm wondering if you happen to have handy the before and after pictures I sent in. Can
Yeah.
you put that on there now?
Sure.
I want to explain the top row is me, 272 pounds. I was almost 70 years old and really having tremendous trouble walking, moving. I was still working full time, but I really struggled to get up the stairs to my office. We were in a building where there was no elevator. And so trying to function, and as a professional, trying to look professional, wearing a black suit every day that never fit me, I'd have to keep jumping up to the next size. And the bottom is me after now it's been 6 years. I'm 76 years old and I'm 167 pounds. I can move. I can walk upstairs. And that's me. That's my husband in the bottom row. My husband, Walter, we've been married 52 years and he has seen me every size, every weight. And he jokes that being married to me is like being married to 10 different women because my body size has changed so much again and again, up and down the scale in our 52 years of marriage. I have three adult children. I have seven grandchildren. And now I have two great grandchildren. And so I'm very blessed. But with all that being said, I was just absolutely miserable being the 272 pounds. One of the joys of sponsoring is that you get to tell your story again and again, and it keeps it fresh in your mind because I never want to forget what it was like to be that weight and that depressed. Yes, I could get through the day at my job and come home. But then I would put on an old pair of pajamas, sit in front of the TV, and just binge all night. And I'm a carboholic. I could eat the whole loaf of bread, the whole 13 bagels, the whole giant bag of pistachio nuts, and just stuff myself and stuff myself and stuff myself. And so I'm a volume eater with carbs. And I remember, just to give you an example of one of the nightmarish memories I have of how terrible it was being 272 pounds at almost 70 years of age at that time. I remember going into a big pizza parlor with my family, and I noticed my nose felt wet. And I looked down at the napkin, and there was bright red blood on the napkin. And I ran into the ladies' room at this pizza parlor. And as I'm in the stall where the toilet is, dropping onto the floor is drop after drop after drop of bright red blood coming out of my nose. And this was a frequent occurrence at that time in my life. And till this day, I don't know what it was, but I suspect it was high blood pressure. It happened at work, my nose would bleed onto papers on my desk. And you might say, well, Nancy, why didn't you run to the doctor? I was scared of finding out what was going on in my body. I was terrified of everything. I was scared to go to the dentist. My life was in shambles. And yet I pulled myself together 5 days a week to go to work at this professional job where I'm supposed to look very together. But I wasn't together. And in my heart, I knew that. Finally, something happened where I remembered OA that I had been in when I was about 31 years old. And I liked it a lot. But then after a few years of being in OA, I went on to school and never returned. So I went to OA, and that night that I went to OA, I was so depressed, and I sat at the meeting. It was a face-to-face meeting. This was in 2015, and it was a face-to-face meeting in Aurora, Illinois, and I couldn't even make eye contact with people, and I'm an outgoing person, but I was so depressed and ashamed. And I went to this meeting in a big black raincoat, and I didn't make eye contact with anybody at that meeting. And I just listened and kind of held my head down. At the very end of the meeting, the person closing up the meeting said these words, "Welcome home." And I had a struggle not to cry. It touched me. Right now, when I say those words, I can feel the tears behind my eyes. Because we're lonely people in our disease. And to hear somebody say, "Welcome home." And here I have a beautiful family, a wonderful husband, a great career, and I'm as lonely and sad as can be deep in my heart. And that's the paradox of our addiction. But to be with people who understand us and understand our disease, you do feel you found your people. You found people who understand. And that welcome home just went right into my heart, right into my soul. And I got a sponsor. And long story short, because I really do want to devote my time to step 11, long story short is I had a blessed recovery through the 12 steps and a sponsor. And I sponsor people now. Many people. And I find that by sponsoring, I'm able to remember who I was. You know, one way I describe how I was when I was into the disease is I was a vampire. And a vampire that was absolutely predestined to drink blood. I had to go out and drink, even though I didn't want to hurt anybody or kill anybody, you have to go out and drink the blood. And I feel like I was a vampire. Every day I'd say, "I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to go on a diet. I'm going to lose this weight. I don't have my black suit. I can barely button it. I'm going to have to go up to a size 28. But then the vampire mandate would take me over, and there I'd be out looking for people to drink their blood. And that's how it seemed to me. I felt like I was under a post-hypnotic suggestion. I could not stop. Every day was going to be a diet. And every day you found me gorging myself secretly in my car from bakery goods, thinking, why am I doing this? How did this happen again? And that's the power of the disease. And nothing that I am aware of could have helped me accept the spiritual solution of this program, which does to me seem like a miracle. I've maintained this 105-pound weight loss now for 6 years. I'm just amazed that finally, year after year, season after season, I can wear the same clothes. This morning, getting dressed for this Zoom presentation, I could have picked any shirt in my closet. It didn't matter. They all fit. It's not even a thought in my mind what is going to fit me. They all fit me. What pants am I going to wear? It's whatever I feel like wearing. That was never the case before. Before it was, is there anything in this entire closet that could possibly fit me? And if it does, I'll be so happy, and that's what I'm going to wear. So that's how much my life has changed in so many ways. The daily reprieve idea that we just heard on page 85, that daily reprieve is so interesting because what it does makes me think I'm on death row. I'm on death row, and every day I get a daily reprieve, but only if I take certain actions. And that's kind of the position that we're in. Now, what I want to do is I want to look at the bottom of page 85, because it's very interesting how the big book takes us into step 11. Right before the mention of step 11 at the bottom of page 85, there's a paragraph that tells us we have just begun to sense the flow of God's Spirit into us. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. So isn't that interesting? It kind of makes me think of birds in a nest that are just beginning to be able to flap their wings, and pretty soon they're going to fly out into the sky. And they're just testing their wings. That to me is this beginning to sense the flow of his Spirit, beginning to develop this vital sixth sense. But it tells us, in order to go further, we must have more action. Just like these birds, to use that analogy, the birds, to fly, they're going to have to use their wings. They're going to have to flap. They're going to have the courage to go forward. And that's the way I see step 11. In step 11, we're doing action. You know, people think of prayer and meditation as kind of some almost passive activity. Well, not according to the big book. According to the big book, it's action. And to me, this is very interesting because I have to say, before coming into this program, I was a Jewish atheist. What do I mean by that? I very strongly identify with the Jewish people, feel a tremendous allegiance to the Jewish people. But I've never prayed before coming into this program. I maybe mumbled a few prayers in the Jewish temple, repeated some prayers for a Jewish holiday, but I never, ever directly talked to a God or tried to talk to God. And I wasn't even hostile against religion. It just was not a part of my life. I always felt like it was for other people, but it was not for me. Intellectually, I think I could still pass a lie detector test if they said, "Do you believe in God?" And I said, "No." I think I could pass that lie detector test because in my head, intellectually, I really don't believe in it. However, I talk to God all day long. I know it sounds crazy, and of course I am crazy. That's why I'm in Overeaters Anonymous. We have a mental illness. The big book tells us that. The doctor's opinion tells us that. And I just live with that mystery. How can you say you're a Jewish atheist and you talk to God all day, and that this relationship you have with a higher power has become the most important thing in your life? I can't answer that question, but again, I could almost cry talking about it because it has meant so much to me and it continues to mean so much to me. Before I started with my talk, I felt a little anxiety, a little performance anxiety. So I did what I always do when I feel that before I'm going to talk. I went and got a candle, and I have it right here next to me, and I can see the little blaze of the candle. I can put my hand over it, and I feel the warmth, and I know that my higher power is with me. And I said a prayer before I started this talk: God, help me to help one person who's listening to me. And I feel very emotional today. I don't know why, but it means so much to give this talk on step 11. And in a way, so ironic that a person like me is going to be talking to anybody about prayer and meditation. But I'm happy to share whatever I have. Maybe it will help somebody. Now, looking at page 86, it's very interesting at the top of page 86, Bill W., who wrote this book, got to blow my nose here. I'm getting myself worked up. Bill W., who wrote this book, said something that always strikes me. At the top of page 86, he says to us, the reader, it would be easy to be vague about this matter. And I can see why he would say that, because he's going to write to people of all ages, races, religions, every type of person, every socioeconomic group, every atheists, agnostics, he's going to write to them with some kind of instructions about prayer and meditation. It would be easy for him to dodge this problem. And I'm sure he was tempted to be vague, just to say, pray and meditate. Just be very short about it. Just say, pick your own prayers. But he didn't do that. And I can really see why he didn't do that. And I think it's so wonderful that he didn't do that, because there are the greatest instructions, I think, for living this spiritual life on pages 86, 87, and 88. These words are solid gold. They're so wonderful. He tells us, for someone like me who doesn't have any kind of experience with prayer or meditation, he's actually given me a script. It's like I'm an actor in a movie, and he hands me a script and says, Nancy, here are your lines. Here's exactly what you should say. And why is it important to say the right things here on page 86, 87, and 88? I believe that it is important because it gives us an attitude. We don't naturally have the right attitude to pray and meditate, because we are people with a disease, a spiritual disease. And we know from the rest of the book that we have resentments, we have fears, we have selfishness, we have dishonesty, we have all these character defects. And so our attitude has to be right to do this kind of spiritual work laid out on 86, 87, and 88. How do you get the right attitude? It's by following his very, what he calls, definite and valuable suggestions at the top of page 86. And what are these suggestions? Well, he tells us exactly what to do at night. And it's very simple. It doesn't tell us we have to write anything down at all. We don't have to send them to anybody. You know, some of us have some very elaborate evening rituals, which if they work for you, you absolutely, of course, should continue doing whatever is helping you. But just know that in the big book, it keeps it so beautifully simple. You just ask yourself these questions, and he is so clear and exactly word for word what questions you should ask yourself. And then it says, after making our review, it doesn't say we send them to our sponsor or we send them to our friend in the program. It doesn't tell us to do that. It just says we simply ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. And it's constructive and simple and can be done probably within a minute. So it's very short. Then we go on to waking up in the morning. On awakening, now this is very, very fascinating, because it doesn't say get up and pray. It doesn't say that. What it says is you get up and you think about the day ahead of you, not about yesterday, not about tomorrow. Right there is something that we normally, I think, wouldn't do without guidance. And it says to consider our plans for the day. But now comes something that is so helpful. It says we don't just plunge into prayer. First, we ask God to give us the right attitude, to direct our thinking, because we have motives as people with this disease of compulsive overeating, which is spiritual disease. We have certain motives that won't be helpful. So how do we get rid of these motives? Well, again, we can't do it ourselves. We ask God to do it. We ask God. And every time it says ask God, I interpret that as we're praying to God, talking to God. God, direct my thinking. Divorce my thinking from my self-pity, my dishonest or self-seeking motives. So you do that before you pray. And that is so interesting. You'd say, well, why do I have to do that? why can't I just go ahead and pray without asking God to help me with my motives? Well, it's because we do need that help. One thing we learn in this program is not to be too proud to ask for help, whether it's help from God, help from our fellow man, even outside help if we need it, that we learn we're people who need help, and we all need help, and we give each other help, and we receive help. And so here we're asking God for help with our motives. And so that's the way we start. And after that, it tells us that our thinking will be on a much higher plane when our thinking is, our thought life will be on a much higher plane when thinking is cleared of wrong motives. And, you know, that's one of the themes of step 11 is getting your thinking to be more and more on a plane that you couldn't reach without the help of God. And I'm using the word God, whatever word is good for you, please substitute it in your mind for me saying God. I'm using it because it's simple, and that's the word I use. But you could use spirit of the universe, anything that makes it real for you and good for you. But it's talking about getting on a much higher plane. And it mentions that on page 86. It mentions it in the first paragraph at the top of 87, the plane of inspiration. We want to be, with the help of God, up on a higher plane, and a plane where we can get the right thought, the right action. It tells us again and again that God will give us an intuitive thought or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. And so how beautiful this is, how glad and grateful I am that Bill W. didn't just be vague about all of this and say, go ahead and pray and meditate. Every word on pages 86, 87, and 88, to me, they're like precious diamonds. They tell me someone like me who needs the instruction, exactly what to do in my spiritual life to connect with my higher power. And on page 87, it talks about not praying for selfish ends. And you know, it's interesting, on page 87, that paragraph, we usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. And then he goes on to say, we're careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. If you look at Bill's story on page 13, when Bill is going through the steps, I'm just going to quickly turn here to Bill's story. It's so interesting where he talks towards the bottom of page 13. There I humbly offered myself to God as I then understood him to do with me as he would. I placed myself unreservedly under his care and direction. I admitted for the first time of myself I was nothing, that without him I was lost. And then he goes on in the next paragraph. He's talking about when he's with Ebby. We made a list of people I had hurt or to whom I felt resentment. I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals. So he's going through the steps. Then he gets down to the next paragraph, step 11. I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. And now comes this part, which absolutely matches what the directions are on page 87. Never was I to pray for myself, except as my request bore on my usefulness to others. Then only might I expect to receive, but that would be in great measure. Now, I'm going to whiz through the rest of this because I want to have time to say a few more things. And I also want to have time to allow for questions and answers. It talks here towards the bottom of 87 about selecting and memorizing perhaps a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. And I want to just read a prayer that I think is here. This is something that really directly addresses prayer. It's a plaque that was on Dr. Bob's desk, which to Dr. Bob best described humility. And in it, there's a beautiful conception of prayer. Humility is perpetual quietness of the heart. It is to have no trouble. It is never to be fretted or vexed, irritable or sore, to wonder at nothing that is done to me, to feel nothing done against me. And here's the part that really gets into a conception of prayer. It is to be at rest when nobody praises me and when I am blamed or despised. It is to have a blessed home in myself where I can go in and shut the door and pray to my Father in secret and be at peace as in a deep sea of calmness when all around and about is seeming trouble. And that's to me how I feel when I talk to God. I can go in and shut the door, be at peace as in a deep sea of calmness, a blessed home in myself. And that's for me, the Jewish atheist. I have to say that because it's so ironic. And I just can't express enough how much this means to me. I want to also talk about experiences that I have in my everyday life. There's a park across the street from our condo building here in Geneva, Illinois. And by the way, in the intro, they say I was from Chicago. I'm a suburb of Chicago. It's pretty almost rural. We're right between the suburban Chicago and a rural area. And it's a nice river town. And there's a beautiful river that flows right by our condo building called the Fox River. There's a park across the street. And when I was 272 pounds, I never even saw the park. I was just interested in getting from the food store, up to my bedroom where I could just eat my brains out. And that park was not of interest to me. Now I cross the street. I go into the park. I do stretches, kind of my own homemade yoga. I put on music. I look at the birds. I look at the flowers. And it's amazing to me. Who is this person? I ask myself. Who is this 76-year-old lady that's walking in the park, praying, exercising, looking at birds, looking at flowers? It does feel like being a new person. Well, one day I was in the park and I had my phone on and I was listening to some music and I listened to this song and the words of the song to me became a prayer. And I want to read this to you. Now I'm 76. Some of you may know this song. Some of you may not. It's a song by Carole King. And I want you to listen to these words. And it really covers my conception of God. When you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing is going right, close your eyes and think of me. And soon I will be there to brighten up even your darkest night. You just call out my name and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you have to do is call and I'll be there. You've got a friend. If the sky above you grows dark and full of clouds and that old north wind begins to blow, keep your head together and call my name out loud. Soon you'll hear me knocking at your door. You just call out my name and you know wherever I am. I'll come running, yeah, to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, All you have to do is call and I'll be there. Yes, I will. Now, ain't it good to know that you've got a friend? When people can be so cold, they'll hurt you, yes, and desert you, and take your soul if you let them, but don't let them. You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running. That, to me, is the way I feel about God. That if people will say, well, Nancy, how do you connect with God? What's your relationship with God? To me, it's just as simple as just calling out God's name, and God is there. And again, get emotional because this program has been so, so wonderful to me and for me. I'm so happy to be in this fellowship. I also want to read a beautiful prayer from a Catholic priest, Michael Judge, who has now sadly passed away. He's called the Saint of 9/11. And I was told about this prayer at one of our wonderful OA birthday parties in Los Angeles. I went to a fantastic workshop at the OA birthday party called Finding Your Higher Power. And at that workshop, this prayer was mentioned, and I loved it so much that I wrote it down and I put it in my phone. And it's a very simple four-line prayer. And again, it's by Michael Judge, M-Y-C-H-A-L, Judge. Lord, take me where you want me to go. Let me meet who you want me to meet. Tell me what you want me to say. And keep me out of your way. You might pick up from that prayer, he was a recovered member of AA. He died in 9/11, running into a building trying to help people. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Oh, Nancy, my heart. Oh, I don't know that there's been a dry eye here. Thank you. Thank you so much. I went to my trusted friend, Mr. Google, and I found the quote of the plaque. I've put it in that. As for Carole King and her Tapestry album, you will have to find that yourselves. Okay, step 11. Let's see some hands. Questions, comments, shares on your experience with step 11, all are welcome. Before we break for lunch, depending on what time zone you're in. Come on. Don't make me sing Carole King to you. It won't be good. Okay, Carly H., go ahead.
Hi, everyone. This is Carly H. I want to say thank you so, so very much. I've never heard the term Jewish atheist, but that is actually the definition of what I am. And I just, it just helps solidify how I can grow my spiritual connection and, I really just appreciate it. I don't have a question, but I just wanted to say thank you, thank you, thank you. And thanks to everyone.
Thank you, Carly. Phyllis, go ahead and unmute, please.
Thank you, Susan. Nancy, so good to see you. I just don't have a question for you because I hear you all the time, but I wanted to say a gratitude. It's always wonderful to hear your story and to realize that as we age, I'm a few years ahead of you, but as we age, it doesn't matter. It took a long time to get to where we are. Yeah. And so I would like you to also post, if you would. I think people would get a lot out of, you're always involved in Harlan's big book study. Yes. And it would be great if you would post that so people who want more of you and more of Harlan would have a way of finding that. Thank you so much for being here today, Nancy. Talk to you soon.
Phyllis, thank you so much. And I want to say that My name is Nancy J, and my name is in the participants list, and I renamed myself with my phone number in the participants list. And anybody who wants to know how to call into the meeting that Harlan participates in, I participate in. It's just a regular OA Zoom meeting. We're just participants like anyone else. It's a wonderful meeting, and we would love to have people. It's 5 nights a week, so it's really become my home meeting. It's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights. And if you text me, and you'll see my number there, 630-440-1945. And I'd be glad to text you back all the information on the time, you know, whatever time zone you're in, the information. It'll give you what time for your time zone. And it's a Zoom meeting, you call in. It's 1 hour, the meeting is 1 hour, and then it's followed by an informal question and answer type meeting. And I love it. That's why I go 5 nights a week, and everybody's welcome. We'd love to have you. Thank you, Phyllis, for suggesting I say that. Thank you.
I have the details somewhere on my phone during the next question. I will try and post it in the chat. I'm being asked for the words of the Carole King quote. I'm not going to Google it right now. Carole King Tapestry album. I'm sure you can find it. Thank you.
Yes, and
efforts only go so far.
Well, say that I am happy to. I'll just take a picture of the I was reading with the Carole King lyrics.
Okay.
And I'd be glad to text it to people. You again, text me. My phone number is there. I don't mind sending it at all.
Okay. You have to text it to me, Nance, and I can put it in the chat.
Okay.
Or to Jen, and we'll put it in there for you.
Very okay. Good.
Judith, go ahead and unmute, please.
Hi, thank you, everybody. Nancy, thank you. And if anybody wants to stay, I can sing it for you. I sang that song over and over, and I always related it to a human friend. And Nancy, you brought the clarity of it could be a human friend, and it also can be our higher power. I just want to thank you. I guess the comment I have is it was really good to hear your clarity on prayer and meditation. It is quiet and it can be still, but it's also very active. It's not just someone floating up, you know, into the sky on a beautiful satin pillow, saying the word Om. Not that I have anything wrong with that, and I do that. But prayer and meditation, according to the big book, is action. And I need a lot of action in relationship to being connected to my higher power. When you talked about the steps, or the instructions that Bill clearly gave us, I forget to have God go before me, mm-hmm. and be ready for his inspiration. My thinking gets so busy and so cluttered up here. It's almost like crossing a street in New York City. You don't do that alone. You don't do that with one person. You do it with 50 people. And so maybe my question to you is just briefly, how do you quiet yourself so that you are able to have God be present as you go through your prayer and meditation so that the right thinking is how I proceed through my day? Thank you. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you. It's an interesting question. I've never consciously tried to quiet myself. I've never done that. But I guess when I am in, and just trying to think about myself here, when I am talking to God, I think I already am in a receptive mood, because that's why I'm, you know, just for me. I'm I think I'm in a receptive mood already. And just by the act of talking to God, just that act does something to me, knowing that I'm thinking about God. And, you know, it tells us on page 87 that it tells us that we should be constantly saying to God, thy will. It tells us that the, let me see where it tells us here. Constantly, here it is, the bottom of page 87. That word is really remarkable. Just when you really think about this, we constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done. That's a lot of activity. If you really take that Bill meant what he said when he wrote that, you're busy all day long. You're constantly reminding yourself of something, for starters. And then you're saying to yourself humbly many times each day, thy will be done. So you're putting yourself in a receptive mood, I guess, is what I'm saying, is when you're living this life, you are really saying to God, I'm ready to receive. You're putting yourself in this receptive posture of knowing you need God, you need guidance. When things are difficult, you're going to relax and take it easy, which is counterintuitive, because who, when they're upset, relaxes and takes it easy? You get tense and you get upset, but they're telling you, no, relax and take it easy. It's telling you not to struggle when our normal, I think, human instinct is to struggle. So this is giving us a lot of very clear instructions. And you know, we're practicing this. We're practicing this. And we're going to spend the rest of our life practicing these things, because these are things that can never be fully mastered. These are things we're just trying to do. We're trying our best to do it all. So your question about being quiet, I would say we're trying to be receptive. We're trying to be quiet. We can never do it perfectly, is really my guess. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Next, we're going to get on the plane and Zoom to Ventura County in California. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Thank you so much, Susan. Thank you so much, Nancy. I can see the tapestry album with her tabby cat, and I could sing and play on the piano and guitar every song on that album when I was 15. So it just really moved me and touched me to hear you talk about the 11th step in this way. And what I realized is, and I have a question, and what I realized is that, first of all, I do want to sing, and I will sing. So I think my higher power is saying, don't sing right now. So it touched my heart, and it made me feel and experience the 11th step hearing you talk about it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yes. And I, my question was going to be, I do seek conscious contact all through the day, and I have a routine for morning meditation. It involves prayers, readings, two-way prayer. And I still have resistance to that morning routine. And maybe incorporating something that makes me feel joyful or brings, like, music would be helpful. My question is, did you experience that type of resistance at all? I know that the steps are discipline and a practice. So, and if so, what would you say to that? Thank you.
You know, I have to give credit to Harlan. I really have to give credit to Harlan here, because I talked to him very early on in my recovery about God. And he just mentioned to me, he said, Nancy, when you walk towards God, he runs to you. That had such a profound impact on me that it opened up something in my heart which has never closed since then. I tell you, I'm a crying mess today. I get emotional about it because it's been a remarkable experience. This whole spiritual recovery, in a way, has taken me by surprise. And I'm so grateful at age 76 to have it, because it gives such a purpose and a meaning to your life. With that, I pass. Thank you.
Now I'm crying too. And now no Jenny crying. So here we go.
Oh, good morning, Nancy J. By God's grace and mercy. Oh, I'm so grateful to get on and hear you speak this morning. And thank you so much for being a light of love and service to me the last 5 years in the Raiders Anonymous. And when you talked about the clothing part, I remember when I first met you, I think it was in 2018 when you came to Colorado for the Colorado retreat?
Yes.
Yeah. And I remember you saying, like, oh my God, I'm packing the same clothes. And I'm like, well, look, how many years later, ladies and gentlemen, she's still wearing the same clothing. And that's been my experience too. And I mean, come on, that's one of the gifts of this program. But I think one of the other biggest gifts is just that we find this connection with higher power, God, spirit of the universe, whatever it may be. And I just loved your presentation this morning, how it was just organically just flowed from you sharing, you know, how you've, you know, step two, you've come to believe, and you're continuing to believe in a power greater than yourself that's restoring you to sanity. And how are you going to do that? By practicing every single day. And I think that's what I got from your talk, is that I just have to keep doing it. It's, you know, the big book says action, action, and more action. But what I wanted to read is this. And this comes from another AA guru who speaks to our OA people all the time. He says, all people on a spiritual path have a spiritual practice, and they practice their practice, and they're faithful to their practice. And then their practice is faithful to them. And it is your effort that's important. And that's Herb Kay. And he's been one of my biggest teachers in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous through AA. And, you know, I hear you saying that, like, you come from this Jewish background, you're atheist. And I loved how you put it this morning, right? And where am I agnostic today? Where am I leaving God out of the equation? I want to get on my knees every single morning. And I thank God from the bottom of my heart, not that I'm abstinent today, but that I'm not a raging lunatic, psychopath, mommy monster, bitch. Like, I just have to say that, you know, that's what we get from this program. And I have stood on a mountaintop with you, and I have watched you dance, and I've seen the joy that you bring to this program and to others. And, you know, for those of you who are sitting in these squares today, this is what happens as a result of constant action, constant effort. We do not give up. We just keep trying, and we do the best that we can today. I was just talking to someone this morning, and I just said, you know, where I am today is I am God's greatest and best version of Jennifer Marie. That's where I am today, right? And I only see it through this program and the work that I do. And here's my question for you.
Yeah.
So I've done some little tidbit and tricks just for people who, you know, might not be at a stage where, like, I just heard the last gal share from California. You know, what are some of the tips and tricks that we do? Like, we just have to keep acting in this program, we say acting as if until it starts to just happen organically, right? So like for me, my password on my computer for 5.5 years, thy will not mine be done. It gets exhausting. I have to type it over and over again. Thy will not mine be done. Why? Because you just told me that's the action that I need to take. That's what I need to be asking God. I'm not asking God for favors. I'm not asking God for give me this and give me that and make my life all rosy and pretty. I'm asking for his will to be done. So what are some other things you did? How did you act as if until it just became a part of this organic process? And with that, I'll pass.
You know, it's so much fun, to use a strange word, to answer these questions, because it makes me think. And it happened really without me trying to make it happen. Like I say, I went to my OA meeting because the blood was running from my nose. I couldn't stop binging. I was depressed. And I started listening to podcasts, going to meetings every night. And along the way, doing the steps, I started to get, like it says, a sense. And it says at the bottom of page 85, right before step 11, the paragraph before it, it says, if we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. That's really what happened to me. And Harlan saying, if you walk to God, he'll run to you. And hearing his miraculous story, which is the greatest miracle story I've ever heard, hearing these things, experiencing my own recovery, that I wasn't binging, I was able to be abstinent, being restored to sanity, hearing all the other wonderful miracle stories in our program, one after another. And hearing all that, you become God conscious. And then I asked myself, and I started to worry about, well, do I really believe in God or don't I? Am I an atheist or aren't I? Am I an agnostic? And one day I thought, Nancy, the label doesn't matter. The label really does not matter. I lit the candle before this talk, and I asked God to help me and help me help at least one person. Please help me to help somebody, to say the words that would help one person. And that's how simple my relationship with God is. It's really not complicated, because I don't have any feeling that it should be, or any pressure on me to make it complicated, because that's just been my life story. I never had a family who prayed and had a lot of shoulds, a lot of restrictions. We were all Jews who believed in being Jewish, part of the Jewish people, but we didn't have a prayer life. And so transmitting that experience over to OA, it just kept it very simple for me. And just Harlan's wonderful suggestions about how simple God, your relationship with God can be, it fit very well with me, and it remains very simple. I went in the hospital last year, suddenly on an emergency basis. I was in the ICU. I'm fine now. Wasn't COVID, it was just some other crazy thing. And God was right with me in that operating room. God was with me in the ICU. Someone called me to sponsor them while I was laying in bed in the ICU, and I kind of laughed. I thought, they don't even know I'm in the ICU. And they called me, and I said, yes, I will sponsor you, because I wanted to do that while I was in the ICU. And that's my relationship with God, is very simple. And when I lit that candle before this talk, I didn't get down on my knees. I didn't do anything complicated. I just lit the candle and said, God, help me to help one person. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have 6 minutes left before we get a quick 30-minute break, and then you're coming back for step 12. We're going to wrap it up. So between Joan and Haya, if you can get straight to your questions, and Liana, we will do our best. So go ahead, Joan.
Hi, I'm Joan, a compulsive overeater. So good to be here. Thank you, Nancy. I actually don't have a question, but I have felt so emotional this morning, and I loved your message about how to work step 11, and you know, the reminder to keep it simple. And I have the Carol Music Tapestry CD, and I played it many times when I was younger, and nowhere near 12 steps yet, but in the sorrow of what was wrong with me and how I felt so alone. So thank you for the wonderful reminder. I haven't played that CD forever. I will play it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Great message today.
Thank you.
I'll pass.
Thank you. And Haya, who is definitely sitting in the sunlight of the spirit with all the sun around her. Go ahead, Haya.
Hi, everybody. This is Kai, a recovering compulsive overeater, bulimic, and restrictor in Colorado, but I'm currently in New Jersey taking care of my mom who just had surgery. Wow, Nancy, I just want to, everyone, you know, that candle that you lit, it lit up the whole room, or the whole Zoom in this case, for sure. I feel it. I felt it. And I'm very, very grateful for what you shared. I wanted to make one comment and then one question. My comment is just how much I appreciate you sharing your experience and with such humility. That's really what I sense so much, this incredible humility. And it's so beautiful to hear that. And I came in 30 years ago, you know, with 34 years ago with a also Jewish, I don't know what I was, just God wasn't in the formula, you know, but that coming, that willingness to just explore and look at the people that were happy and recovered and just open myself up. And that has developed for me. And actually I was able to plug it in to Judaism, which has been great. There's no issues at all. And it reminded me of a story I once heard about a rabbi who asked his students, where is God? And they're like, God is everywhere. He's like, where is God? God is in heaven. Where is God? And they kept going on. And they kept obviously getting the wrong answer. And they said, Rabbi, where is God? And he said, wherever you let him in. And I feel like that's what you expressed today. And I'm just really, really grateful. My question is, I'm sitting here, I'm taking care of my mom who's 78 now. And, you know, I actually ran up to her with the phone and I said, this lady, what's 106 pounds, you know, because she's a struggling compulsive overeater. And my question, and I love her and I'll give her whatever she wants or needs or anything. My question is, coming in at almost 70 years old, you know, was that, what was that like in terms of, you know, oh, I've tried so many times, what is it going to be different now? You know, that kind of, was that an experience that you've had, or has that ever been an issue, or was it an issue, or have you ever dealt with that?
Well, I went to meetings every night. I very faithfully stuck to my food plan, very moderate, three meals, very moderate three meals, going from huge quantities of food to moderate three meals. And it was a huge change as far as intake of food. And I lost very nicely all along the way. I had no problem with losing, because when you go from huge quantities of food to just a moderate amount, and when I was hungry at night, which is when it would always hit me, after I got home from the meeting at night, I think I could eat the wallpaper. I would jump into bed and listen to podcasts. And I sometimes for hours just laying there listening and so amazed by the amazing recovery, people like Lori C. and Harlan and, you know, different people, all the wonderful people, special editions, and even AA speakers like Clancy I, just remarkable people. And it filled me with such hope, the miracles of the recovery of all these people. And I basically said, Nancy, you can do it. You can do it. And I'd lay there in bed hungry, but listening to these podcasts and day after day after day. And after about a year and a half, the 105 pounds was gone. And of course, it seems like a miracle, just a miracle. Everybody, everywhere I went, people were shocked. The dentist, people in my building, people at work, were clients. They were all, I think they were afraid that I was ill. Something was wrong with, you know, at my age to lose that much weight. But people would worry. They'd say, you've lost a lot of weight. And they'd look at me kind of concerned. And I'd say, oh, I've been working hard at it. So that way they'd know it wasn't that I was dying. Because I guess it is unusual at this age to lose that much weight, but it's certainly possible. There was no reason why you can't lose weight at this age as any age.